Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. Now, I'm under strict instructions for this fourth episode to do something that is hard being Irish because we don't like asking for help. But my husband Barry says I cannot put another podcast out there without saying or asking people to please subscribe and review. And of course I hate saying that because I don't want to get a mean review because that would just, you know, ruin my day. But please do subscribe and review if you've been enjoying it so far. And also, if you want to follow me on social media, it's at Caroline Foran, and I do a lot of talking there on my stories as well about day-to-day kind of anxieties. So yeah, that's the little housework bit out of the way. I'm sorry as well that this episode is coming after a bit of a break. I probably stupidly in hindsight planned, I didn't plan. I went live with my podcast just before I went on honeymoon. And of course, I don't think it was going to be the best idea to be recording podcasts about such a heavy topic while I was in Thailand trying to have a good time. So there was a bit of a gap there. And I know I've been getting lots of messages from people asking me when the next episode is out. And that's obviously amazing. So yeah, so here we are back again, and I suppose first of all I have to comment on the travel anxiety, which is a huge topic in itself. One of the biggest hurdles for me was always the idea of going away, because you're quite literally outside your comfort zone, and that always scared me. I was okay with the idea of going to Spain or France, and I think it's literally just geographically I feel like that's closer, I think, because you can get home relatively easy if you desperately need to. And it's that having those sort of escape routes in place that helps me be confident about traveling. But obviously when you go further afield to somewhere like Southeast Asia, it's a little bit further away obviously, and I guess it's a different kind of culture. And for me, one of my biggest anxieties, because anxiety has always been an issue with my stomach, one of my biggest fears is that I'll be sick. And everyone I spoke to said they got really sick in Thailand, and I didn't get sick once. I didn't have not one upset stomach, and I felt better in Thailand than I do at home. So I'm so proud of myself for having gone, but also annoyed at myself for having waited so long, because little did I know I was going to feel so good over there, and you know, make the unfamiliar become familiar and increase my comfort zone and just put myself into situations that I thought I wasn't going to be able for, such as going snorkeling, which I know might sound silly to someone who loves the water, but I don't, and I don't like getting my face wet under the water. But to kind of do all those things and to eat exotic foods and to be at ease being two flights away from home, and it's just about sort of letting go and letting go of that need for control and knowing that I can be anywhere in the world and manage my anxiety. It doesn't have to physically be in my home or my concept of home. It could be anywhere. So I'll probably delve a little deeper into travel anxiety in future episodes and sort of tips and what I found helpful. And because I did have a couple of little waves of panic while I was away, like nothing major, just you know, on the first night I felt a bit wobbly. I think I was just, it takes me a few days to sort of settle into somewhere new, and I had a couple of moments where I felt a little bit dodgy for about 5 seconds and instantly panicked that I was going to be sick, and then I wasn't. And usually that was just when I was, you know, in the airport on the way to somewhere else in Thailand. And I think that was just literally a case of, I have to be okay right now because I have to get on this flight. So my anxiety made me feel unwell. So yeah, like, I know travel anxiety is a big thing for lots of people, having talked about it on my stories before. But I was fine. And not only was I fine, I had ball and had a great time, apart from the mosquito bites and the inability to tan. But I just turned into a massive heat rash. My skin hates the sun, but my tummy loved it. So that is the main thing. And now I feel like so excited about the prospect of going away again and where we might go next. Now, of course, I stayed in 5-star hotels, so I still had a lot of my comfort literally with me. So, but I kind of feel like if you're going to travel and you're really anxious about traveling, why not do it when you can save up and do it your way and stay somewhere that makes you feel comfortable? You know, I don't need to prove anything by staying in a shithole or trekking through the Amazon jungle when it's just not my thing. You know, so you can be in different places in the world, experience different cultures, and still have a little bit of comfort if that is what's important to you, and that's totally fine. So yeah, that was the honeymoon break. And just to give you an idea of upcoming episodes, I'm so excited to come out with them. I will be doing an episode with Pat Dively around anxiety and public speaking, which I know is obviously, people fear that more than death. People who don't even struggle with anxiety the same way that I would have, or maybe you listening experience it. So that's a really important one. Dr. Rosie Plunkett, who is a psychiatrist, will join me to discuss the very important topic of medication. That's something I get asked about a lot. It's something, obviously, if you've read my book, you know that I took medication, and but obviously I'm not qualified to talk about it outside of my own experience, so it'll be great to be joined by an expert. And Orla Walsh, who you'll probably be familiar with, will join me as well to talk about nutrition and diet around anxiety. For this one, I'm joined by a very reluctant guest, who is my husband Barry. One of the questions that comes up again and again is how someone who doesn't have anxiety can be there for someone who does in their life, and how to communicate with that person and what to say and what not to say. And I think Barry was the best person in my life to have that conversation with. That said, he couldn't have run away faster when I asked him to do it. You know, he doesn't struggle with anxiety like I do. He seems to be a very confident person, but as soon as you put a microphone in his face, he was puce. He was just like, oh Christ, you know, this was his biggest, one of his biggest fears. So to get him on was a bit of a comfort zone stretch for him as well. And he's a private person. He's not as much of a talker as I am. Obviously I would talk till the cows come home, and he certainly isn't a talker if I shoved this microphone complete with my sock on top in his face. But it's so important and it comes up a lot, and eventually I bullied him into it. So yeah, so we talk about anxiety from his perspective and what he found helpful when I started to really fall apart, and the things that he learned and what empowered him and what made him feel like he was able to cope and be there for me, and the patterns that he would have observed, that kind of thing. So hopefully you will appreciate hearing about my experience from someone else's perspective. Yeah, just please bear in mind that he's not at all comfortable with the idea of being put out there like this. So it's a big deal that he did it, and I'm so grateful. One of the key bits of advice that we didn't touch on in our conversation but occurred to me afterwards, and something I want to mention now before we get going, is that when someone asks you every day, how are you doing today? How do you feel today when you're really struggling with anxiety?
that is not helpful because it is not like a stomach bug that will improve in a matter of hours. I had people asking me all the time, like my family and my brother who meant so well, who would be like, oh, any improvement today? And you feel so bad having to say, no, there's no improvement. You feel like you're letting people down. So it's better not to check in with someone on that kind of hourly, daily basis. You know, if you're going to talk to them, just be like, how are you? Have a general chat. Don't expect that because they've gone to sleep and woken up, the anxiety might be gone, because that's, you're putting pressure under them. Even though I know you mean well, they're going to feel pressure by hearing that and thinking, oh God, well, I wasn't okay yesterday and I'm still not okay today. So what does that mean? It might take you a little bit of time to come back to yourself. And for me, that was months into years. And, you know, for you, it could be a matter of just days. But if you're someone listening who has a loved one or a partner or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or husband or wife going through anxiety, don't check in for those, you know, updates on how are you now, how are you feeling now, because it's just a little bit frustrating and it's not exactly helpful. So just to start off with that piece of key advice, and now I will let Barry do the talking. I know you hate me so much right now. This is like not your idea of how to spend a Sunday night. What would you rather be doing right now?
Anything.
But something that a few people asked me to touch on in the podcast was how to be there for someone when you're not the person with the anxiety, but you want to be supportive to someone who does have it, whether it's a boyfriend or girlfriend or daughter or anything. And I think you're the most qualified person in my life to be that guest. I want to start by saying thank you. Your belly's gurgling. I promised him that I'd make him dinner, but not until we've recorded the podcast. So that's just your hungry belly. And it's not going to be anything fancy. It's going to be fried leftover potatoes and an egg.
Not a great deal, is it?
Not a great deal. But yeah, I want to start by saying thank you. People message me, which is amazing, to say thank you for making them feel less alone or less like they're gone mad, and for making them feel normal. And you were that person for me when I didn't have anyone to talk to who had been there and known what it felt like. So you have been the person that's kept me feeling like I still was me all along, especially during those initial really dark few months or year, as it was. I really don't know if I would have been able to get to where I am now without you. And that's kind of scary in a way, because I always think, what if I didn't have you? Would my anxiety be a lot worse? But I suppose it's okay to depend on you when we're married now. So I can't get away that easily, or you can't get away that easily. And you probably say that we depend on each other, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to go back to the very beginning. In 2014, when it all kind of hit me, anxiety was not something you were familiar with at all, really, was it?
No, not to the extent that it affected you, you know.
What? How did you understand it at that time?
Just like a normal emotion that would crop up from time to time again. I mean, for me, personally, just like, you know, you have a big presentation to give in college or things like that, exams.
Yeah, and something that would rise and pass.
Exactly, yeah.
But this was a lot different to that. This was anxiety that was rising and staying there when there was no presentation to give or anything.
Yeah.
So that was completely unfamiliar to you, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I'd never heard of anyone, no one I knew or at least that I was aware of, had ever had anything like that happen. So I was
So both you and I thought I was patient zero.
Patient zero, yeah. Possibly.
Why do you think that was? Do you think people just weren't talking about it then, or were they not able to identify it as anxiety, or are they afraid of what people might think if they said it was a mental health issue?
Yeah, possibly all of those things. I think even if someone, potentially if someone I had known was suffering, maybe they wouldn't have felt empowered to, you know, come out and say it.
Do you think you would have?
Probably not. I mean, I suppose it would have been more of a thing that, you know, you might tell your family and stuff, but you might feel this kind of social embarrassment or something.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
To tell your friends and, like, you feel like you're going crazy or something.
I know, and, like, that's such a part of the anxiety. Like, whatever is the reason that triggers it, then you start to add all these layers on, and one of the biggest layers is, what will people think of me for struggling? And then that is, the anxiety becomes bigger, and that kind of becomes the anxiety itself. So, like, if we were in a position where people could talk about it as openly as I now do, I don't think half the people would suffer with anxiety. And I think because of the way me and you talk about it in day-to-day life, it's like a non-issue for me these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
because we've normalized it so much.
Yeah.
To go back then, it was a complete 180 transformation.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I always, you know, even when you started feeling bad, it was always you still there, but it was just kind of this like cloud around you, I suppose, and messing with your thoughts, and then of course that kind of influences how you behave and how you act and all of that stuff.
How did you feel?
Well, I was just, I suppose, as confused as you were when it first kind of came on. You know, it kind of changed from you just not feeling well every time we ate, and kind of figure out what that was. Was it something that we...
You also thought it might be South Dublin City Water, didn't you?
No. That was just you. Tried to tell you that was silly, but it didn't really make sense, did it?
No, I was just looking for anything that could be. But yeah,
it was literally looking for anything, because I suppose it was every time we ate, you'd feel bad. So it was like, okay, has something in your diet changed, or trying to get to the bottom of that. But then that kind of got progressively worse and worse, and then started, you know, affecting you mentally. Like, initially it was really just a kind of physical stomach kind of thing.
And did I have to convince you that it was actually all sort of emotional and mental, or had you started to think about that before I realized it? Like, I think you were probably looking very much for something tangible to put your finger on.
Yeah, I think I, because nothing, I suppose nothing previously in my life had pointed me towards something kind of mental health problems. It wasn't where I was exploring, like I wasn't looking at that.
And you just weren't aware of the connection between how your mental health can physically affect your body or manifest.
No, not at all. No.
So yeah, so you were in the dark as much as I was.
Absolutely.
What was it like to see me sort of, I mean, I feel like it was over a matter of days that I went from being me to completely falling down into a heap on the ground.
Well, it was pretty scary seeing such a drastic change in kind of, you know, space of a couple of months. Yeah, I suppose I was, you know, as in the dark as you were about the whole thing. I was trying to figure out what could be wrong. And then when it kind of, you know, you kind of knew it was more a kind of mental kind of problem. And I remember you had told me, and you're like, you know, I think I'm, you know, suffering with anxiety, and that's...
Even remember that conversation.
Yeah, no, I vaguely remember that. I remember you saying it to me, and it was like, that's what's causing, you know, all everything else in my stomach problems is... they just happened to come first, but it was really a mental health issue. And I suppose once that was kind of, you know, we were confident that that's what it was, I suppose I could read up as much as I could about that and try and read people's stories and try and get an idea in my head as to how this, just people's stories in general, because I just, as I said, I had never heard of anyone, you know, I've had talked personally, known anyone who'd, you know, been suffering.
So I'm at home every day, staring at the four walls. You're gone to work, obviously, because you have to, because now I'm not earning any money and we've just moved in together. And I think we also really underestimate the fact that we were only together 6 months. So that was such a huge shift in the kind of relationship we had, to suddenly you were taking care of me on a very basic physical level.
Yeah.
We kind of forget about that, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think it made us get more serious more quickly. Not that we wanted it, but...
Well, it definitely did. But I'd known you for a long time before that as well, so...
Well, we were only living together 2 weeks.
Yeah. So it was like...
Did you think, oh my God, she's falling apart 2 weeks after we move in, is it me?
No, I never really thought that, to be honest. I suppose if you thought it was me, you probably would have just left, so...
And I was begging you not to leave.
Yeah, so I was pretty sure it wasn't me.
What was it like for you being at work every day? You know, you've got a pretty high pressure job. How many times a day did I phone you? Like, I felt like I couldn't get through an hour. You probably felt like you had to phone me to check up on me all the time as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, I suppose it was very hard to leave in the morning, and then...
Because the mornings were worse for me.
Yeah, mornings were always worse, yeah. Yeah, and then driving in, you know, you would always be on your mind, you know, you might get stuck into a bit of work and, you know, you might forget about it for an hour because your mind was preoccupied with something, but it would always be there in the back, just, and you jump back up to the front of your mind and you think about it.
Yeah, and even like hearing you say that now, like, I just feel so guilty that I became a stress in your life. Like, my brother, when he would try to reassure me about what I was going through, would say like, oh, everyone has their cross to bear, and I always felt like I was your cross to bear. Not to sound like martyr, but like, I was the thorn in your side, or I was your challenge. And I just felt like I didn't want to be that person. I wanted to be someone that you like couldn't wait to get home to. And
yeah, but I knew you were that person before, and you would be again. So,
but I just feel like another layer of the anxiety was that I was feeling like I can't do this to you. And I think I've probably remember trying to like break up with you or something, or like be like, please go and be, you know, I think about all the things that you would have done were it not for that, you know, where would you be now? And like, was it hard for you to reassure me? So that was a layer of anxiety that was, I didn't need to have in my life. You know, you were there, you wanted to be there.
Yeah. And I think like it helped you a lot when I suppose you kind of accepted that I was going to stay and I was going to help you get through it, you know?
I know. I remember saying to your mom, I was like, I felt really guilty for them as well. I felt like your family were thinking, who is this person that's, you know, is this the best thing for my son? Because obviously you'd come first to them, and I felt like I was dragging you down and holding you back and everything. And it was far more, you know, emotional pressure than we would expect so early on in a relationship. And I said to your mom, I don't know why you're staying with me. And she just was like, because he loves you, Caroline. And I just started crying. And I was like, sometimes you have to just let someone love you. And I couldn't understand that. Actually, I didn't realize how amazing you were as a person until we went through that, because I thought, well, of course you're not going to put up with this. Of course it's not fun anymore. I'm not sexy. Not wearing makeup. I look like, what's your man? Kiss every day.
Oh, yeah.
The mascara running down my face if I even put it on. And, oh, God. Like, I just was not, you know, the cool girlfriend at all. And it was so hard to believe that you loved me. And it was so amazing. I mean, one good thing to come out of it was to realize that you actually had all this depth, and that I didn't realize that you were interested in it for the good times. And I was like, well, maybe he actually really does love me.
Hmm. Yeah.
Was it hard to convince me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you were just, as you'd say that to me all the time, wouldn't you? But I just kept telling you, and eventually it got through to you. And then I think you kind of stopped worrying, having to worry about that.
Well, I stopped worrying when you proposed to me, but that was quite...
That was a long time after that.
Well, now I don't really worry about it. That was like one of the hardest things, was the pressure I felt to put on our relationship. And I thought it would be easier for me to just fall apart and be alone and be back with my parents, because, you know, they gave birth to me, or they, you know, they're stuck with me, but you weren't. So it was really honourable, and it was really amazing that you were willing to do anything for me. And obviously, like, we're married now, so I know now that we were always going to be more than that, but I don't.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Know if many guys could handle that.
Do you think?
I don't think so.
I don't know. Just didn't. It always just felt like, it always just felt like something that, you know, I knew, you know, we'd be able to get through it.
But like, I love that you say that though. Like, you were always, I always was like, this is my shit. I'm going through this. You don't need to. And you would always say, you know, we're going to figure a way out. We were a wee so early on, you know. And I think that made us so much more serious and know that we could actually handle anything. But it was definitely like a stress in your life. And that was hard pill for me to swallow, that I was a stress in your life.
Yeah, yeah. But that was okay, you know. It didn't have to be all, you know, life's never going to be super easy all the time, right?
And I made you watch every episode of 90210 with me.
Oh, yeah. It's my guilty pleasure, though.
Yeah, you loved it. So, do you remember that first time? Do you remember when the shit really hit the fan and we were in Wagamama?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was scary enough, but then I kind of just snapped into action mode, I suppose, and it was just like...
What was action mode for you?
Well, just in that moment, it's like, right, okay, we need to get home. So how do we get home? Okay, let's go pay the bill, get to the car, get home. So it was just like, let's do this thing, do the next thing. Wasn't really the place to be trying to figure out what was going on or trying to calm you down, like, there in public when you're probably feeling all this social pressure because you're crying into a bowl of noodles. So.
Actually, they wanted to call my book Crying Into My Noodles because of that anecdote. And I was like, that doesn't sound too empowering.
No.
But something that people really benefit from is knowing how, like, our language around the anxiety started to change. Like, I think in the early days, as we were both so in the dark and so clueless, everything was a disaster. And, you know, I'd say to you, if I was even able to say to you that I had a panic attack or felt a wave of anxiety, because I was afraid of what you'd think. I was afraid of having had a good day and then having to tell you, I actually don't feel good. And then you feeling like, oh, I thought we were past this, you know.
Hmm.
And actually, it became so important for us to always talk about it and to normalize it so much. And I think that is such a big hurdle for people with anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we moved from you saying, oh, like, I didn't feel great today or whatever, and then me trying to say, oh, you know, really dig down into it and everything and make a big deal of it, from to kind of like, oh, that's okay, like, what's for dinner? And then, you know.
Well, of course, that's the question you were always asking.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Think about love, food a lot. But, you know, that, like, not making a big deal of it, you know, not to, you know, minimalize it, but, you know, not to make a massive deal out of it either, you know.
Yeah.
And not to say that this is, okay, now
it's not the end of
our whole day. Evening is going to be consumed by analyzing why you weren't feeling good, yeah, particularly good that day, when, you know, really, there doesn't have to be a trigger. It can just be some kind of, that day you have some kind of chemical, you know.
But that was so, like, that's how you dealt with it, is that you researched everything. You probably learned more about anxiety before I did, and the chemicals, and, you know, you were able to say to me, well, you know, you have your period, or you had a throat infection, so your everything is going to be below par, or your hormones will be out of balance, so you would be able to sort of tell me what was going on. That was your kind of coping mechanism.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, I've forgotten a lot of it now, but, like, you know a lot of it now, much more than I did. But, you know, I did a lot of reading about it and trying to figure it out. And then, you know, you could see patterns with you where you would maybe be feeling good for a week and then you might have panic attack or something like that. And then you'd nearly always feel bad for like 3 or 4 days after. And then you would think that, oh, you've kind of reverted, or you've gone back. But it was a case of kind of 3 steps forward, 2 steps back kind of thing for a lot of it, you know.
Yeah.
You'd still be making progress, but those 2 steps back would be particularly hard for you because you wouldn't be able to see that, okay, it's 2 steps back, but I'm still actually making progress.
That's the one thing that you've constantly said to me, and you still say to me all the time, in everything in my life, is like that no road towards, what do you say, like, it's never straight.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you always wanted this, like, single, you know, incremental progress, like, along a straight line. But there was always going to be peaks and troughs, you know, and you would go up and down. But if you looked at the general, you know, your general trend was going up, but it could be bouncing up and down in between that, you know.
Mm.
And every time you thought you had a bad time, you know, you would think, oh, this is me going down and my trend is actually going down, but the trend is actually still going up, you know. It was like... gradually getting longer and longer from when you had, you know, bad moments or attacks, you know, panic attacks.
Like, you observing those patterns was really essential for you to be able to say to me, you're going to be okay, because you knew that you had proof that I was going to be okay.
Mm.
Whereas, so when I was saying to you, I'm not good, or if it was the aftermath of a really bad wave of anxiety, is where I was still thinking, all my thoughts were still tinged with fear, and I still was seeing through these anxiety goggles and everything scared me, and I wasn't going to believe in that moment that I'd be able to do, like, go for coffee with someone, but you'd be able to see, I know that's how you feel now, but I know you won't feel like this in a couple of days.
Yeah, and I think you started to know that as well. But
I need you to tell me, like, I needed you to...
Yeah, but you'd know that yourself, that you'd be like, okay, I don't feel good now, and therefore all my thoughts are now tinged with this kind of negativity. Mm-hmm. And you were able to then rationalize that, you know, you actually knew yourself that this is what happened. So you could say, okay, well, I know my thoughts now are way shifted towards the negative. And I know that's only because I'm still in the aftermath of having a panic attack like yesterday, say. And I know in 3 days or whenever it is, you know, in a few days, that's going to subside.
Did it make it easier for you having that knowledge and know, having the experience with me to be able to understand it whenever you felt it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd definitely be able to recognise it more now in myself, like if I feel anxious about something.
And you would use the assess and address approach?
Of course, yeah. Trademarked.
I need to trademark it, actually. What have you learnt most about anxiety? What do you think you know so much now that you didn't then? And what do you think would have been so important for you to know then, when I probably needed it most, that you know now?
I think probably the most helpful thing was like learning about what's actually going on in your brain.
The chemistry, like?
Yeah, for me anyway, I suppose more kind of science-oriented brain.
You're an engineer.
Wanted to know kind of what was actually happening. And it also takes away some of the scariness of you thinking, oh, I'm gone mad or something, or, you know, you think you're losing your mind, where it's just, you know, it can be something as simple as some kind of hormone imbalance or something in your brain chemistry is slightly off balance, and that's, you know, not something that's outside your control. You can't think yourself to produce more positive hormones in your brain, you know.
Yeah. What would you say to someone who is the you in the situation when they're saying, how do I support my girlfriend or my partner or my boyfriend?
I think reading up on it and then...
My book.
This great book called Owning It. In all good bookstores.
Yeah.
Certainly reading up on it and then reading other people's stories of it, talking to people who've gone through it. Because I suppose, you know, there's only so much, like, even an expert in the topic can tell you if they haven't gone through it themselves. Sometimes people find it quite reassuring to hear from the horse's mouth, you know, how things actually were. And then kind of trying to normalize it as well and not make a super fuss about it, and know that it takes a long time, but it's definitely something that you can get through.
But as someone who isn't the one experiencing it, is it hard sometimes to believe, to not, you know, like we always say, like we would never ever say to just snap out of it, but is it hard when you don't see anything being wrong and you look fine? Is it hard to understand that it's a real thing, and, you know, it's not something you can just resolve with one chat or one cup of tea? Do you think more people who don't have anxiety need to know about it?
It's hard to empathize, I suppose, when you haven't ever felt that thing yourself, but then that doesn't mean that you can't maybe imagine what it could feel like for someone. I mean, if you imagine you're the scariest thing you've ever done, or feeling anxious about something, maybe a moment before you jump out of a plane on a skydive or whatever it is for you, that's been your scariest moment, and then try and imagine feeling that sitting on your couch at home with no thing that can actually alleviate that, you know, and feeling that 24/7.
Yeah, it's pretty shit.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've talked mostly about the beginning and the bad days, but, you know, I like to think that now I have a pretty good handle on it, and we just got back from our honeymoon, and I'm so proud of myself that I went to Thailand, because I was most afraid that I would have the shits every day.
Mm-hmm. No shits.
Neither of us had the shits, and we had the ice and everything. But I did have a couple of moments of anxiety, like brief, but I mean, you were there to snap me out of it. So talk me through that kind of anxiety and how you deal with those little waves that I get very infrequently now.
Yeah, I think a lot of the reasons you feel things now is like you kind of have built something up in your head that you think is going to be worse than it actually ends up being. Mm-hmm. And you probably been a bit worried about going so far, as in you'd never been that far away before. And
I was worried about being sick.
And then the first night, you know, you get any kind of, worrying about being sick, building this up for months. And then the first night, maybe you feel something a little bit off in your stomach, whereas I would completely ignore that. So I'd go, oh, I feel a bit weird, and then it would be gone 5 minutes later and I'd go back to sleep. You would then, because you built it up so much thinking you're going to be sick, you'd then be like, oh shit, I'm going to be this is it, I'm going to be sick for 2 weeks.
And what do you say to me in that scenario?
Well, just try and, you know that you can rationally think about it and know that.
I can't always, though. Like, it's really hard when you're in the moment to rationalize, but it definitely helps to talk through it in the moment as well.
Yeah, and I think of you, kind of like some of the CBT type exercises, isn't it? You know, mm-hmm. you're kind of writing down what you're feeling, and maybe when you look at it on paper, it looks a bit ridiculous. And then, you know, what did I eat? I didn't ate anything bad.
Yeah.
Am I really going to be sick in this really nice hotel, you know, on our first night? Probably not.
And you like doing kind of diversion tactics with me as well, you know, where you'll try and take my mind off it. And
yeah, I think if I see you stuck in your own head,
you always ask me, what are the hamsters doing now?
Yeah, the hamsters are doing something.
But you can see me being anxious if it happens to me, can't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. And then, like, a lot of the time all it takes is just to talk about something else.
Yeah.
And if you can actually get engaged in something else, you've then forgotten about, or you're not dwelling on it. I think dwelling on you thinking that you're sick when you're probably not seems to work.
Is it annoying that I wake up pretty regularly, even when we're at home, and if I feel a twinge in my stomach, I do panic when I'm that tired? And I think it's because I'm that tired that I can't rationalise and I can't fall back asleep that I think I'm going to have this bug.
It's not that regularly, in fairness.
Well, it was regular for a while, and then at one time I actually did have a bug, and then I was actually...
And you were grand.
I was having the really worst bug of my life, and I was actually kind of, in a way, I was kind of glad, because I was like, this is the thing I've been most afraid of, and it's happening, and I'm actually handling it. So I don't think success with that kind of anxiety is avoiding being sick. I think it's being like, okay, well, if it happens, that's okay, and I'll be able to handle it. And same with panic attacks. And I always say to people, I think I was stuck in a rut way back when, even with you, of thinking that my success was measured in the amount of good days that I had had, and thinking, well, I'm fine because I haven't had a panic attack, or I'm fine because I've had a few days of anxiety, but I need to be fine regardless. Like, you know, instead of trying to, then I was in fear of the next time it would happen, but I need to be able to say, well, even if it does happen, I know I'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. And you knew, you, like, eventually you got to the place where you were, I know if I have a panic attack, I can deal with this, and it's not going to kill me for the next few weeks thinking about what have I done wrong to cause this. And
how important is it, do you think, for people who have anxiety to have someone to talk to who doesn't say, oh my god, that's awful, or who just normalizes it? Do you think everyone needs a person that they can talk to, like, if you're not in a relationship?
Yeah, I think for a lot of this stuff, actually just talking to someone about it does alleviate a lot of it. So.
But you also have to mind yourself as well. Like, I feel sometimes, obviously, I get a lot of messages from people talking about their, sharing their stories, and I'm so grateful to hear them and for them to be in touch with me. But then I feel like I kind of take it on, you know, if you can be empathetic to a point where it actually is something you're dealing with as well. So, like, how do you have any advice for how you would sort of look after your own mental health while supporting someone who's very, very fragile?
Well, I suppose it's different for you, you know, because if you have, you know, hundreds of people messaging you, you're like trying to empathize with 100 different stories, and that can start to get overwhelming. But you know, if it's just one person and it's a loved one, you know, it's, you know, you can take that on. I think, well, at least for me, it was probably okay to take on, maybe not for some people. I didn't feel like it was like too badly negatively impacting on me.
Like, obviously, your support as well. If you needed it, you would talk to your friends, or
yeah.
Do you think I've come a long way?
Yeah, well, that's fairly clear, isn't it? I mean, you couldn't, pretty much, we're bedridden for months or longer. I can't even remember how long it was. You know, not able to work, not able to really do anything, not able to take care of yourself, and to, you know, where you are now. So, like, you're a million miles away from where you were.
You like the practical stuff. You like having a plan of action. So what would your plan of action be now for someone else?
Get informed. Read up as much as you can about it, and try and understand how people feel.
And I think you'd be big into, obviously, like, it's the bullshit free guide, but you would be big into being super practical in your approach. So, like, even, like, you'd kind of laugh at me when I was going off doing different therapies. And
You were doing a lot of magic.
I was doing a lot of, like, I would have done anything, but the key thing that they all had in common was just the physical relaxing of my body, which was always going to be a good thing.
Yeah. And like, any of this, any stuff, even if you don't agree with the ideology, or like maybe there's not necessarily any good science backing behind it, but if it actually makes someone feel good, and it makes the person who's subjectively feeling it, and it makes them feel good and makes them relaxed. I mean, there's absolutely no harm in doing any of that stuff, you know. So whatever helps you. And the most important thing, I think, is just to completely normalize it and not make a big deal about it. I think when you get to that level with your partner or your friend or whoever it is, I think that's a pretty decent place to be, to kind of being, knowing that you're on the road to
owning it.
Oh, Jesus, that's nice. But also know that it takes a very long time, and it's not something that's going to be...
Well, it can take a very long time, but for some people, like, yeah. I do believe, like, if we knew then what we know now, I don't think it would have been as long.
Yeah,
there's a
yeah.
lot more information out there.
And yeah. I suppose it's very hard for me to say, actually, you know, I only know your experience. For you, it took a long time, but I don't know.
But at the same time, you're right, like, it's not something that goes away overnight. Yeah. And just because you have one day feeling good doesn't mean anxiety is gone. It's about understanding it as a stress response that will present itself, and it's about managing that.
Yeah, and if you start to feel every good day, think, I'm cured now, or I'm better, or that's it, I'm done, then it just makes the bad days that will probably come worse, you know?
Yeah.
And whereas the better approach is, you know, when you just have a good day and it's like, okay, I'm having a good day.
Yeah.
And
then to remember that it might be one step backwards, but overall, yeah. you know, forward.
Yeah, I think you can probably... Certainly, if you can't see it, if you're in it yourself, but if someone you know and you're close to can probably see the general trend, they can probably see, like, are you generally getting better or are you generally trending worse? And if you're trending worse, you probably need to see what you can do to try and help that.
Before I let you go, and you'll be free from podcasting hell. If for someone listening, okay, if they're their partner is anxious and they come home from work or whatever and they say to the Barry in the situation, oh, like, I've had a bit of a panic attack today, or I've had a bit of an anxious day, what would your protocol be for that person? What should they do?
Well, I think first of all, just don't overreact, but at the same time, you know, don't fob it off either and say it's nothing, because they're feeling the anxiety and it's real to them.
Mm-hmm.
Then I suppose you probably do want to talk it through a bit, you know, especially if it's just come up out of the blue, and try and think of what might have caused this, or what's changed maybe in your life that's maybe pushing you into this. Try to kind of make sense of it and rationalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess want to normalize it. You know, it's okay to feel what you're feeling, and it's better to talk about it than to try and keep it bottled up and keep it to yourself.
And it's definitely helpful for me to hear you say that whatever I'm feeling kind of makes sense, even if it's not something that you're feeling yourself, that you're not like, oh, Jesus, what's wrong with you? You're like, oh, like, no wonder you feel this way.
Yeah. And then this is kind of coming back to the first point, don't overreact. You don't want to sit on it then for the entire night.
No.
You know, discuss it, then move on. Don't dwell on it for too long. You know, decide what you'd like to do that might make you feel a bit better. Something that'll take your mind off it, maybe. I don't know, whatever that is for you.
Shitty TV.
Watching shit TV, or, you know.
Having a bubble bath.
Yeah. Whatever.
Or just having a chat about how your day was, maybe.
Whatever works for you, yeah. Something to engage your mind and try and get you to stop thinking about it. Finally, then, at least in your case, I would tell you that, you know, it's going to pass. And even if you don't feel like it will, it will.
Because you know that it will.
Because I know that it will, because that's what it's always done.
And a few cuddles.
Some cuddles.
Thank you so much to my husband, Barry, my reluctant husband, well, reluctant podcast guest. I don't think he's reluctant to be my husband. Well, I hope not. He was a great sport. And coming up next, I will be talking with Georgie Crawford, who is just, you obviously follow her already, because if you don't, what are you doing with your life? She's an amazing woman. She is a cancer survivor, and I've appeared on her podcast as well. She is doing such amazing things, and I wanted to talk to her about anxiety around, obviously, the life-altering experience of a diagnosis such as cancer. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to chatting with her, so I hope you will tune in again. And don't forget, if you are enjoying the podcast and you want something that you can return to again and again, both books, Owning It and The Confidence Kit, are available in all good bookstores, and some shitty ones too, I'm sure, and on Amazon and the likes. So yeah, if you're interested, they're not expensive, and I would love for you to read them and give me your feedback. Till next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.